that's not, I mean, in my personal opinion, it's not good to get, if you fall into a rabbit hole, understood, but you get stuck into it, you get pulled further and further, like, that's, I don't know, I feel like that's negligent. That's almost, I think that that's when these companies need to be held accountable, you know?
Yeah, and when it's, like, you know, playing on people's worst fears and insecurities, which is where a lot of these, like, conspiracy theories are grounded. It's troublesome. Anyway, we are coming up on the end of our time here. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Gap on this final Friday before inauguration, right? That's a thing that's happening.
Yeah. And MLK Day is on Monday the 18th.
Oh, yeah, talk about that.
Oh, there's going to be a live stream of the annual MLK celebrations. It's going to be a little different, but KBOO is going to be airing it starting at 12 p.m. That's noon. And you can tune in and enjoy yourself. I'm Tammy. This is The Gap. Online with me is Althea. Sonia, the one and only. Thank you all so much. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves and each other.
Thanks, all. Have a good weekend.
This is KBOO Portland. It's Friday. It's third Friday. It's 9 a.m. Time for the Veteran's Voice with Marvin Simmons. Keep it locked right here on your Community Connection.
Take a trip with me in 1913 to Calumet, Michigan in the copper country. I'll take you to a place called Italian Hall, and the miners are having their big Christmas ball. I'll take you in a door and up a high stairs. Singing and dancing is heard everywhere. I'll let you shake hands with the people you see and watch the kids dance round the big Christmas tree. You ask about work and you ask about pay. They'll tell you they make less than a dollar a day. Working their copper claim, risking their lives, so it's fun to spend Christmas with children and wives. There's talking and laughing and songs in the air, and the spirit of Christmas is there everywhere. Before you know it, you're friends with us all, and you're dancing . Well, a little girl sits down by the Christmas tree lights to play the piano, so you gotta keep quiet. Hear all this fun, you would not realize that the copper boss thug men are milling outside. The copper boss thugs stuck their heads in the door. One of them yelled and he screamed, "There's a fire." A lady, she hollered, "There's no such a thing. Keep on with your party, there's no such a thing." A few people rushed and it's only a few. It's just the thugs and the scabs fooling you. A man grabbed his daughter and he carried her down, but the thugs held the door and he could not get out. And then others followed, 100 or more, but most everybody remained on the floor. The gun thugs, they laughed at their murderous joke, while the children were smothered on the stairs by the door. Such a terrible sight I never did see. We carried our children back up to their tree. The scabs outside still laughed at their spree, and the children that died there was 73. The piano played a slow funeral tune, and the town is lit up by a cold Christmas moon. The parents, they cried, and the miners, they moaned. See what your greed for money has done.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. You can also hear our earlier shows at kboo.fm, Veterans Voice, one word, Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin with our friend Sonia. She's engineering the show for us today. Thanks, Sonia. Before I get started, there's a few things I want to talk about. And one of them is one of the people I really like watching on TV is going to be 99 years old, and that's Betty White. She was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and she was on some other show. But Betty White, she's going to be 99 years old. And a few years back, she hosted Saturday Night Live. So, and then Joanne Rogers passed away. She was 91 years old. She was the wife of Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And lots and lots and lots of children grew up watching him and that show. And it's really pretty good. I'm going to talk today about a couple things. One, the first one's going to be about female veterans and some of the problems they're going through right now. And then we'll talk about what happened on January 6th in D.C. But the first I want to get to talk about, this is female veterans blame toxic base for reproductive issues. I'm going to die young. Former Army intelligence analyst Elba Barr is trained to connect the dots, training she now is using to sift through the mounds of medical records. While Barr deployed to the Middle East and Africa after 9/11 to track Al-Qaeda, there is no question in her mind that the most toxic and dangerous place was Kashi-Kahabad, or K2, a former Soviet airbase in Uzbekistan, a jumping-off point for classified missions into Afghanistan. K2 was, to me, a base that should never have been a base. Hazards, signs everywhere where the hazards were, she said. The 41-year-old mother who blames the 4 months she spent at K2 for her chronic reproductive health issues. I have cervical issues, continued having severe pains, endometriosis. I had to have a partial hysterectomy last year. I've had both my ovaries removed, and they found onset stage 1 cancer. Barr is one of more than 200 female K2 veterans who flooded a Facebook page where members discussed contamination and health issues. Defense Department employee Mike Lechter was involved in early testing of the base. He said that new information has revealed a lot about the base. We've learned that the Soviets have had a chemical weapons decontamination unit adjacent to our camp. Images obtained by CBS News show that the base was also a dumping ground for used chemical weapons equipment, including protective gear like face masks, that were used to block chemical agents. Those face masks were found in Tent City, where troops worked and slept. Barr said that the CBS News investigation was life-changing, given her clarity on the cause of the medical issues she had been facing for years. I spent the better part of 10 years wondering, am I going crazy? And so that's what the CBS News investigation did. It validated all, a decade's worth of issues. Barr is now opening up to her children about her toxic exposure. I have no doubt I'm going to die young. You're assuming that I'm not. I live on borrowed time, 100%. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Oh, man. Despite the data, the Department of Veterans Affairs does not recognize a link between K2 and illnesses. Barr wants leadership to step up, and despite her and other veterans suffering, she is sure that they would serve again. Whew. And if you ask us, we'll do it again in a heartbeat. All we're asking for is we upheld our end of the deal, and it's on the VA and it's on the Department of Defense to hold up theirs. Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller drafted an executive order that would open the door to medical help and financial relief for K2 veterans. The executive order was in its initial stage when the Capitol was overran by rioters last Wednesday. Rioters and traitors. The K2 veterans group is hopeful it will still get signed by Trump, though they are reaching out to Biden administration in case there is no action before Inauguration Day. But that's just one of the many problems that women have in the military. Health problems, sexual harassment, you know, they have trouble making their getting promotions as fast as the guys do. They're kept out of some jobs because of being female. It's just a really, really hard time for these women. And for health care problems like they're having now from K2, you would think that the government would want to take care of these women, but they don't seem to want to do that. You know, no, it's a real problem. I don't understand why a woman would go into the military in the first place with all the trouble that they have being in the military. But that's just one of the stories that really hit me pretty hard. I'm going to send it copy up to Angie up in Washington so she can read it. And she's doing pretty well. Like I said last time, she did have COVID-19, but she's recovered and she's doing fine. She's I miss her a lot on this radio show. But let's talk a little bit now about what happened on the 6th. And it's really interesting because, you know, for years and years, people have been complaining about white supremacists being in the military and the racism that's in the military against our black and brown sisters and brothers in the military. But it got to be so bad that the Joint Chiefs of Staff had to send out a memo about what happened at the Capitol. There's eight of them. Members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are photographed in the Joint Chiefs of Staff's conference room, more commonly referred to as the tank, in the Pentagon. Memorandum for the Joint Force subject, message to the Joint Force. The American people have trusted the armed forces of the United States to protect them and our Constitution for almost 250 years. As we have done throughout our history, the U.S. military will obey lawful orders from civilian leadership, support civil authorities to protect lives and property, ensure public safety in accordance with the law, and to remain fully committed to protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. As service members, we must embody the values and ideals of the nation. We support and defend the Constitution. Any act to disrupt the constitutional process is not only against our tradition, values, and oath, it is against the law. The violent riot in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021 was a direct assault on the U.S. Congress, the Capitol building, and our constitutional process. We mourn the death of two Capitol policemen and others connected to these unprecedented events. We witnessed actions inside the Capitol building that were inconsistent with the rule of law. The rights of freedom of speech and assembly do not give anyone the right to resort to violence, sedition, and insurrection. On January 20, 2011, in accordance with the Constitution, confirmed by the states and the courts, and certified by Congress, President-elect Biden will be inaugurated and will become the 46th Commander-in-Chief. As service members, we must embody the values and ideals of the nation. We support and defend the Constitution. Any act to disrupt the constitutional process is not only against our tradition, values, and oath, it is against the law. On January 20, 2011, in accordance with the Constitution, confirmed by the states and courts and certified by Congress, President Biden will become the 46th Commander-in-Chief. They said that twice. To our men and women deployed and at home, safeguarding our country, stay ready, keep your eyes on the horizon, and remain focused on the mission. We honor your continued service and defense of every American. It's signed by all the joint generals of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But when they have to come out and remind the service members of what their job is and their job to protect the Constitution of all enemies, foreign and domestic, and they seem to put a real emphasis on domestic. And so they've told the military to start studying and seeing how bad racism is in the military. And U.S. military watchdog reviewing extremism in ranks after riot, but they already knew that there was a problem already with there being racism in the military. The United States Defense Department is doing everything it can to root out extremism in the ranks of some troops and veterans who joined the Capitol siege on December 6th, Pentagon leaders said Thursday. And I saw, you know, I was looking and watching that. My brother had called me, and I hadn't been watching TV. I'd been outside, so he called me and told me to go turn the TV on. And I went and turned the TV on, and I saw, you know, that these masses of people were trying to break into the Capitol building. And I thought, what if those had been black and brown people, you know? What would have happened? You know, what would have happened to those people? What would they have done, the Capitol Police would have done then? I looked and noticed the groups that were there doing, you know, this horrible stuff. There were QAnon, there was the KKK, there was the Proud Boys, the Boogaloos, the American Nazis, you know, and other groups that were there. And, you know, the people were told that these groups were coming into Washington, D.C., and that all the rhetoric on the chatter on the internet was saying that they planned to do all this stuff. If there had been, like I say, Black Lives Matter or groups like that, you know, which I support, there would have been tons of police there. There would have been, the National Guard would have been there. There was no way that, you know, that they they would have let people into the Capitol building. I heard people, you know, hollering, "Hang, you know, hang Pence," you know, and they were telling each other how to get into the Capitol, you know, and what to do. I heard one guy, he was hollering at the police, you know, we've been invited to be here, you know. He just kept screaming that, and then they then one of the reporters went back to what, you know, what Trump was saying at that right before this. He was saying that, you know, they need to walk down to the Capitol building, and that he'd be marching with him, which was, you know, one of his regular lies, and that, you know, they were going to have to be brave and you know, have to fight and all this. And then Giuliani gets up there, and then he talks about combat, and some other freak congressman, I think it's maybe a senator, I don't know, he was talking about all this horrible things that they should do to the people inside the Capitol building, and just riling all these people up. And they went down there, and that's exactly what they did. You know, they went down there and they acted, you know, they acted like they had a right to be there, that they had a right to go in there and do whatever they wanted. They had a right to go in and start trying to, you know, take people hostage, like the Congress people or their senators or whatever. But, you know, that's white privilege. That's white privilege. Look what they, here in Portland, what they did, you know. They always bring up Portland. What we did here in Portland was nothing compared to what they did. What they did, nothing compared to that. And they got away with it for quite a few hours before the National Guard and the state police and all those got there. And then they couldn't understand why they were getting beat up on by the police. You know, one guy said, "We had your backs. We've had your backs. Why are you doing this?" You know, it's like, you know, we have a right to be here to destroy this Capitol building. But I want to get back to what I was talking about, extremism in the military. Okay. Military troops as well as members of the National Guard now flock into Washington to provide security for President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration are continuously evaluated for involvement with white supremacy, criminal gangs, and hate groups, said Gary Reed, Director for Defense Intelligence. Boy, they sure don't do a good job of that, especially from what we saw going on in there. I'm trying to turn the page here, and I can't quite get it. Hold on. Okay, I got it. Simply put, we will not tolerate extremism of any sort, in Department of Defense, Reed told reporters in a briefing from the Pentagon. The Pentagon Inspector General separately announced Thursday that it will open an investigation into white supremacy and gang activity. The watchdog will review how well the military prohibits advocacy and participation related to supremacist, extremist, or criminal gang doctrine, ideology, or causes, Carol R. Hands, Assistant Inspector General for the Evaluation, said in a memo. The review was planned. Oversight work based on situational awareness about what's going on in DOD. Some guy didn't print out very good. Whose name is? The issue of white supremacy and extremist ideology within the ranks of our military is not new, but the attack on the Capitol makes clear this alarming trend must be immediately addressed. A group of Democratic senators and independent Bernie Sanders wrote in a letter Thursday to the acting Pentagon Inspector General, Sean O'Donnell. And Trump relieved all the civilian oversight and put in his own people into those offices. And so that's probably had some problem with getting the National Guard into Washington, D.C. Rising extremism. Air Force veteran Ashley Babbitt was fatally shot by Capitol Security as she and other rioters tried to break into the House chamber. The Army is investigating an officer who led a group to the pro-Trump rally, a retired Air Force colonel who was arrested after he was photographed inside the Capitol with a military-style helmet and zip ties, and a Navy veteran in a buffalo headdress who was arrested after breaking into the Senate chamber. The military has seen a rise in extremist activity over the past year among both active duty troops and veterans as the wider American society has become politically polarized, a senior defense official told reporters. Increases in military extremism are partly due to the more internal reporting, the official said, but the Pentagon couldn't provide statistics on the number of cases or how they were resolved. Acting Defense Secretary Christopher Miller ordered a review last month of the Pentagon policies on extremism and hate groups, a report with recommendations due in June. Pentagon leaders moved to rename bases that honor Confederate figures last year as protests over racial inequality rocked the country. The renaming was strongly opposed by Trump, but Congress ordered it to proceed as part of the annual defense policy law that was approved over his veto. You know, there's always been racists in the military. Even when my father was in World War II, and I'm sure it was there when my grandfather was in World War I. I remember guys having the old rebel battle flag, you know, on their walls. And I remember in the movie Platoon that there was a big Confederate flag flying on a armored personnel carrier towards the end of the show. So there's always been racism in the military. Always been racism. And you know, to act like it's such a big surprise that there were veterans and active duty troops at this attack on the Capitol is just unbelievable that they didn't see this coming. You know, the government has so many informants in these groups now, you know, that they know what they're going to do, where they're going to go, you know, what they're planning and all this. And to not be ready for what happened on January 6th is just a failure. If it would have been black folks or brown folks doing that, it was sure would have had a different outcome. That's for sure. There's a high percentage of people of color in the military now. It's a large percentage in the military now. And there's still this, you know, this filthy racism that's going on. This is called far-right extremists recruiting in military. Far-right and white supremacist extremists are actively recruiting in the United States military and have gained more support over the past year, the Defense Department said. National Guard troops are seen inside the Capitol a week after hardliners who supported Trump stormed the U.S. Congress last Congress, shutting down the legislature. The Pentagon said it will launch an investigation into the extent of extremism in the U.S. military ranks. A senior defense official who declined to be named told reporters that there was an increase in far-right activity among the military over the past year, though he noted that it is paralleled similar growth in society at large. So that's pretty interesting. We know that some groups actively attempt to recruit our personnel into their cause or actually encourage their members to join the military for the purpose of acquiring skills and experience of our military forces, the official told reporters. We recognize that those skills are prized by some of these groups, not only for the capability it offers them, but also brings legitimacy in their minds that their cause is right. The military has been aware of the problem for some time, but it was understood by the involvement of serving and retired force members, as well as police officers, among the pro-Trump protesters who violently forced their way into the Capitol building last week. One military captain, a psychological operations specialist in North Carolina, organized a group of 100 people to join the protest. She has since resigned from the military. We in the Department of Defense are doing everything we can to eliminate extremism, said Gary Reed, who oversees intelligence and law enforcement in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Department of Defense policy expressly prohibits military personnel from actively advocating supremacist, extremist, or criminal gang doctrine, ideology, or causes. The Pentagon's independent inspector general said they are opening a probe to see how effective programs are to prevent the growth of extremism and criminal gang support in the 2-million-strong military force. But the Defense Department has not yet released any data on the size of the problem. The inspector general's probe announcement came after the letter Thursday from 14 U.S. senators urging the Pentagon to look more closely at the problem. The issue of white supremacy and extremist ideology within the ranks of our military is not new, but the attack on the Capitol makes clear this alarming trend must immediately be addressed. They noted that the survey by Military Times last year found that about one-third of all active duty respondents have seen signs of white supremacist or racist ideology in the ranks. So that's that. Sonia, I think I'm going to go ahead and ask you to please play that second song for me so I can get these papers in order here.
Coming right up, Marv.
Okay,
thank you. This is Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti by Woody Guthrie with David Rovix.
David.
I wonder how he pulled that off.
I don't know.
Stay tuned, folks. Marvin will be right back after this short break.
Say there, have you heard the news? Sacco worked at trimming shoes. Vanzetti was a traveling man. Pushed his cart round with his hands. Two good men's a long time gone. Sacco and Vanzetti are gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Sacco came from across the sea, somewhere over Italy. Vanzetti, born of parents fine, drank the best Italian wine. Sacco sailed the sea one day, ended up in Boston Bay. Vanzetti sailed the ocean blue, ended up in Boston too. Two good men's a long time gone. Sacco and Vanzetti are gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Sacco was a family man. Sacco's wife three children had. Vanzetti was a dreaming man. A book was always in his hand. Sacco made his bread and butter, being the factory's best shoe cutter. Vanzetti worked both day and night, taught the people how to fight. Two good men's a long time gone. Sacco and Vanzetti are gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song. Ask me about the payroll robbery. Two clerks were shot in the shoe factory on the streets of old Braintree. I'll tell you the prosecutors' names: Catman, Adams, Williams, Kane. Them and the judge were the best of friends. Did more tricks than circus clowns. The judge, he told his friends around, gonna put them rebels down. Anarchist Bastards was the name. The judge, he gave these two fine men. Two good men's a long time gone. Sacco and Vanzetti are gone. Two good men's a long time. Left me here to sing this song. Sacco docked in 98, slept upon a dirty street, taught the people how to organize. Now in the electric chair he dies. All us people ought to be like Sacco and Vanzetti. Every day find ways to fight on the people's side for workers' rights. Two good men's a long time gone. Sacco and Vanzetti are gone. Two good men's a long time gone. Left me here to sing this song.
Good song, good song. And now I'm going to get back before I go into something else. One of the things I saw there in the white, in front of the Capitol building, was a gallows with a noose hanging down. And there were quite a few other nooses around that day. And I was thinking, there's something that's kind of came back to me, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And then I remembered there was a real horrible right-wing supremacist extremist book came out called The Turner Diaries by William Lance Pierce, which is just a horrible book about taking over the America and getting rid of all minorities and politicians and liberals and the horrible things that they were going to do to them. One of the things that in the book that they were talking about was the day of the rope. And that was the day, a day that they were going to start hanging people, the politicians and the people who supported the black movement, black and brown movement. And so, you know, that came to my mind about what they were going to do. And I remember that being in the Turner Diaries, which is a book used and read by far right wing supremacists and extremists and everything. You know, like the kid that blew up Oklahoma, he read that book. The Order, they read the book. And people today in these organizations are reading the book. The Klan, the American Nazis, and all of those folks are reading this book. But that's where that thing came when I saw that gallows with that noose. That came from the Turner Diaries about hanging people that they did not support. And one of the... I got some stuff I got off the internet about it, but it's so disgusting, I'm not even going to read it. But that's where that thing came from. One of the interesting thing, military veterans organized to clean up D.C. streets after Capitol riot. A group of roughly 200 veterans and other volunteers participated in a cleanup event near Capitol Hill on Sunday in an effort to rid the area of trash, debris, graffiti following the deadly riot last week that overtook the U.S. Capitol. The Washington Post reported Thursday that the group was organized by David Smith, a Navy veteran, who told the newspaper that he was incensed to hear reports of veterans among the mob that stormed the Capitol last week. Smith, who founded an organization that links social justice-minded veterans to community activism called Continue to Serve, told the Post that his group encountered neo-Nazi imagery and other signs of far-right groups during their cleanup. He touted the cleanup effort, saying there was so much good energy, especially in the fallout of something so negative. While Smith and his fellow volunteers assisted in the city cleanup effort outside the Capitol by removing signs in support of Trump and other debris, the pro-Trump signs and other items left by rioters inside the Capitol building will be instead preserved as historical artifacts, according to the House Administration Committee. One of the most potential significant artifacts would be the preserved from the riot is Speaker Nancy Pelosi's splintered nameplate, which rioters were seen brandishing during the attack. Yeah, they tore the name. She was really one of the main people that they wanted to go after, was Speaker Pelosi. You know, they stole her lectern. They had a picture of this guy holding it as he's walking out of the Capitol building, but he was from Florida, and he did get arrested, and the lectern, she used it the other day in the impeachment of Trump, but he got arrested for that. He's married to a doctor, and he's a stay-at-home dad who takes care of, I think they said he had 5 children, but I don't know. They thought they had a right to do that. They thought they had a right to go in there and just destroy stuff, you know, to tear down things off the walls, to walk out with, you know, stuff that's been in the Capitol for 200 years. You know, they just destroyed stuff. They went into the offices and they dug through all the people's papers and took pictures of themselves and, you know, I've never seen the left wing do anything like that at all. I've never seen it. And I've been part of the movement for a long time. January 6th saw, the January 6th riot saw Capitol Police quickly overwhelmed by hundreds of rioters hours after the president at a nearby rally urged his supporters to press GOP lawmakers in supporting his attempt to overturn the 2020 election, and that's a coup. Five people died amid the chaos at Capitol Hill, including a Capitol Police officer who sustained injuries responding to the mob, and a woman who was shot by police while attempting to climb through a broken window. Several others died from what police described as medical emergencies. Trump has called for calm in the days following the rioting and leading up to President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration next week, as law enforcement agencies across the country brace for more potential damage. A handful of veterans organized told CNN they were actively checking their membership lists for veterans who have come up in the news. Organizations like the Disabled American Veterans, AMVET, said that they also plan to revoke membership to those found guilty of illegal actions or violence. We believe that our members have a very sacred right to protest, Dan Clare, a spokesman for DAV, Disabled American Veterans. They fought and sacrificed to protect the freedom, but when protesters cross the line and commit illegal acts, especially in the nation's capital, we found it to be horrible. The DAV have more than 1 million members and is a bipartisan organization. While the organization supports the members' rights to protest, it was disgusted that vets were involved in any way in the acts of violence in the Capitol. And that's pretty interesting. Okay, here's Wall Street meeting has literally plotted to overthrow the president. They're talking about FDR. But, you know, when you think back, you know, there's been other, you know, coups and people trying to take over the government. Look what happened. People are saying that when President Kennedy was killed, you know, that was a plot to get rid of him and put somebody else in the presidency that they wanted. And they got Lyndon Baines Johnson instead. And the Vietnam War carried on with LBJ. How many kids did you kill today, LBJ? Franklin Delano Roosevelt made an enemy of the richest Americans with remarkable haste. By his first term, his heavily progressive New Deal taxes and suspension of the gold standard inspired vocal opponents within the highest, I was going to say ranks, the highest echelon of industry. Among them was William Randolph Hearst, who filmed a message decrying the impotent and despotic new tax code. Yet all of Roosevelt's powerful enemies, perhaps none were more formidable or incensed than those considered throwing him out of the office by a way of a military fascist coup. It is impossible to say exactly how close the business plot, also called the White House coup, and Wall Street pushed, came to overthrowing the president. Nearly all who know about the plot is the result of an investigation conducted by the House McCormick-Dixon Committee in November of 1934. His chief whistleblower was Major General Smedley Butler, who wrote the book War is a Racket. Really. A respected and tenured military leader with a talent for rallying support to his side. His part in the story began July 1st, 1933, the day he met with two members of the American Legion who has ties with Wall Street heavies. At the time, Butler was enjoying a boost of positive public profile as a result of his enthusiastic advocacy for veterans. American Legion member Bill Doyle and Gerald McGuire wanted to harness this when they asked Butler to appear at the Legion convention in Chicago as part of a campaign to undermine the body's leadership. Butler was sympathetic. He had long known that the Legion's capacity for ignoring its members. In the second meeting, McGuire, a $150 a week bond salesman for Grayson MP Murphy, proposed Butler bring along a few hundred veterans for support and showed him bank statements amounting to $106,000 to pay for their travel expenses. That's a lot of money back in 33. A skeptical Butler surmised that no coalition of veterans could have gathered those funds. Adding to his bemusement was a speech they wanted him to deliver. It lacked populist pro-veteran rhetoric and read heavily as a screed in favor of the gold standard, a policy which Roosevelt had suspended about a month earlier. The gold standard, as Butler's subsequent research would uncover, was a major concern for the country's wealthiest citizens. Bankers especially did not want to be paid back on their gold-backed loans with cheaper, ever-inflating paper. Keynesian economics be damned. To the capital interests of this country, a break from gold meant ravaging the nation's wealth and savings. That's why he did it. That's why FDR did it. To make these rich people pay their fair share. At this point, Butler knew that McGuire was taking orders from someone and requested to speak up the chain of command. It was then he met with Robert Sterling Clark, whose net worth was $30 million, owed much to the recent inheritance from the Singer Sewing Machine fortune. Butler remembered Clark as a millionaire lieutenant from when they served together during the Boxer Rebellion. Clark was blunt about his concerns. He and his associates hoped Butler would encourage support within the Legion and perhaps the country for the reinstatement of the gold standard. "I am willing to spend half of $30 million to save the other half," Clark confessed. As Butler suspected, this agreement disappeared less and less to be about veterans' interest. In fact, Smedley Butler won two Medal of Honors. Clark also bankrolled McGuire's seven-month trip abroad in December of 1933, in which the bond salesman was to survey the transforming political tide of Europe. He observed the ascending Nazis. He appreciated the Italian fascists and their symbiotic relationship with the country's powerful business interests. But McGuire's ultimate model ended up being the far-right Nationalist League in France called the something, which had managed to summon 150,000 supporters, many of who were veterans. Because after World War I, veterans really took it tough. Gerald McGuire was a portly, sweaty man and made a habit of talking to Butler about his concerns with frustrating vagueness. But after his trip, he brought Butler up to speed and came forward with an even larger proposal. Yes, McGuire admitted, it was true that the money came from a coalition of concerned captains of industry. At the moment, they had invested $3 million in the project, and McGuire estimated he could raise $300 million needed. What he wanted, he told Butler, was for the Major General to assemble a paramilitary force of some 500,000 veterans and use them to overthrow President Roosevelt out of office. So this was a plot by the richest people in this country, all over money. All over money, because FDR took us off the gold standard. And they wanted to overthrow the government and put in their own man. And I think that they wanted Butler to be it. But there were people like the DuPont family was part of it. Oh man, here's the Liberty League here in the United States, which has ties to the Nazis in Germany, and this guy has a thing on him. It says Liberty League, and on both ends of the Liberty League is the swastika. And Henry Ford, he really liked Nazis. Who else we have? American Liberty League. May Day gathering in New York mocked and compared the American Liberty League to the fascist Nazi party. Gerald McGuire arrives to testify the congressional committee about his ties to the plot to supplement the presidency. New York, 1934. What's in the New York Times? And nothing happened to these guys. The big bankers. They wanted the veterans of the Spanish American War would attempt such a treasonous act. Shortly before the hearing, the League in 34, newly formed Liberty League. You know, none of them got in. Among these members were DuPonts, S.B. Colgate, Sewell Avery, John Hasgrob, Alfred P. Sloan, and Secretary of State Root. Butler noticed Clark's name on the list as well as Grayson's. They were all called before the Congress, and nothing happened to them. Nothing happened to them. They all got away with it. So there's been many, and there will be more. You know, I was thinking, you know, comparing to this to the Tet Offensive in 1968 in Vietnam when the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese armies attacked all the big cities and provinces in Vietnam on the end of January of 1968. And they were hoping that by doing this there would be a general uprising and they would be able to take over the government by this uprising. And I was thinking that's just what these groups wanted. They wanted to do this to show people that they could do an uprising and they could take over the government. But when that failed, you know, they started talking about, well, then they'll go after each state capital. But they're ready, you know, the government knows what's going on, and the government wants to stay the government, you know, and so that these groups start putting out, you know, don't go to the capitals because it's a trick and they're going to get you. They were getting people at the airport in Washington, D.C. after June 6th. They were arresting people going home, you know, that had been part of the plot to take over the government. And Trump is guilty as sin. He is guilty as sin. He provoked those people to do that, to try to overthrow the government. So is Giuliani, and so is some of those Republicans that supported these traitors that tried to take over the Congress. You know, people haven't really seen the pictures of inside the Capitol, of all the damage that was done to the Capitol, to the marble, and to the pictures on the walls, and they have no idea how much stuff got stolen out of that by these white privileged white guys and women. There were a lot of women involved in this plot to take over. Well, I'm kind of done ranting and raving today. But we have to be on our toes. We can't let this happen, you know. I don't want a totalitarian fascist government, you know. I want a nice socialist government that takes care of people. So we'll be back on February 19th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thank you, Sonia. I appreciate it. I don't know. I don't think Sonia was listening.
I'm just scrambling to get that Ain't Marching.
Okay.
Here we go.
She's going to play I Ain't Marching Anymore. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Sonia.
To the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all?
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.